Welcome to the Brothers Murph Get Smart, a weekly podcast in which two brothers, namely myself, Michael Lee Murphy,
and myself, Nick Murphy,
attempt to become more knowledgeable about this great, big, beautiful world and all the things in it.
Yeah, we're basically here to ask the dumb questions so you guys don't have to.
Yes, we are. We're a couple of dum-dums trying to learn some
we're
stuff.
A couple of dum-dums trying to learn some stuff about
a couple of dum-dums here. Come on down, you dum-dum. What you know? Nothing. Oh, no, nothing. I'm a dum-dum.
Yep.
And that's a new character. It's very new different from every other gone. Character.
It's called Guy Doesn't Know Anything.
Very different from the court jester of last week. Welcome, guys. Again, we're the Brothers Murph. Super excited to be here with us, as always, is the indoctorable. Can't be cured.
Is that a word?
Yes.
Nope. Probably not.
You're not allowed to be
Casey
a doctor.
Casey Brown.
Casey, this is why they need to learn things.
I know.
We're a couple of dum-dums here.
We're a couple of dum-dums, yeah?
You'd think after, like, 20 episodes, they would have gotten a dictionary and just opened it to, like, the I.
The I.
Hey. I have definitely gone to the dictionary because I've already run out of I words. But anyway... The voice you heard, the much smarter voice, the other male in the room, he's in a different room over there in Washington, D.C., is our guest.
Hey, it's me. It's Dylan White.
Yes, it is.
Dylan White.
Dylan White. Dylan White is here to drop some knowledge on us this week. He's been listening the last few weeks. He hasn't been here, and he's been terribly concerned. He feels that we have not learned a damn thing.
Yeah.
We've gone off the rails, so he's here to school us. Casey's at her wit's end with us. She can't anymore.
She now has a studded belt that she's going to hit us with.
Yeah.
Once we get out of
line.
So
we hear a very quiet whoop.
A studded belt? Did I buy it at Hot Topic?
That's the only place I saw them, of course.
None of you guys have ever seen Casey. Casey is what we call
a dom.
A goth
she's a dom.
Gal, I think is how they're called. Yes.
Oh my God.
We can paint that picture. This is an audio format.
If she can't kill with every piece of her clothing, she won't wear it.
Yep.
I don't think somebody with my high-pitched voice is allowed to be
goth. She has 14-inch... You all have to sound like Amy Lee from Evanescence. You have to be like... That's the only voice. She's just over it. Dylan...
Yeah.
...is going to be taking us back into the ever-expansive world of King Arthur. Is that right?
That is absolutely right, because if there is one thing I can say, we have not been focusing enough on Arthur on this podcast.
That's fair.
God damn it. That was the whole purpose. The Brothers Murph get King Arthur.
The Brothers Murph get smart about King Arthur.
And Lancelot.
That was the original jingle.
So we're bringing it back, guys. We're going to do some more King Arthur here. Now, we've done some English and Welsh tales, and I remember there's... Scots and Picts and all,
Saxons and such.
And Saxons, and there's all these different things, and we are kind of, you know, touching on things. What are we talking about now?
So now, you know, you're right and stuff. We've been focusing a lot on the British and Welsh and even the English stories as well of King Arthur.
Ah, yes.
And now it's about time for us to jump across the channel and start looking at what those French people were coming up with.
I was going to say Slovenia.
Oh, don't even get me started on Slovenian Arthurian
legend.
All right.
Don't get me started.
There's nothing there.
Yeah.
Uzbekistan.
It'll be a short podcast.
Can we like recap where we left off? Because
it's been a little while.
Kind of remember, but it's a different year now, you know?
Welcome
to 2017, ladies and gentlemen. Brothers Murph Get Smart, sponsored by
2017.
2017.
So, Casey, last time we left off, we had explored sort of like the history that led to the Britons needing a hero that became Arthur. And then we looked into sort of like the Battle of Badon and what he would have fought in if he was real. And then on top of that, we looked at the Welsh sources like Culwic and Olwen, which is the first story of King Arthur. And then we ended with Geoffrey of Monmouth. And Geoffrey of Monmouth, while he was English, Geoffrey of Monmouth wrote at a time when these sorts of things weren't really mattering anymore, English versus French or anything like that, because Geoffrey of Monmouth wrote after 1066, and he wrote after the Norman conquest there. So Geoffrey is the one that dragged Merlin into the Arthurian legend. He is the one that came up with Uther Pendragon as Arthur's father. And he also tries to connect Arthur to a long legacy of mythology coming back before him. So in Geoffrey's story of King Arthur, there are many kings that come before King Arthur. King Lear is one of these people that pops up in Geoffrey's story.
Oh, cool.
And actually, we didn't touch this on the last podcast, but I think it's interesting enough to bring up. Arthur, in Geoffrey's version, is descended from the Trojans that survived the Trojan War.
Really? Interesting. See, now the podcast is all starting to come together like this.
Exactly. Okay. So we might have heard, we heard a little bit about the House of Atreus and Agamemnon and Menelaus.
Yeah.
What you might not have realized at the time is that they were fighting against Arthur's ancestors. Oh. And according to Geoffrey and Monmouth, Arthur is descended from Aeneas. And so when Aeneas came from Troy and founded Rome, he also founded the dynasty that will become Arthur.
Damn. Okay.
This is according to Geoffrey of Monmouth, who also just like made up a lot of stuff, right?
Yeah, none of this is true at all. There's no historical backing at all for this to be the case.
And even when there were historical backings, wasn't it like really bad sources?
Really shady.
There's a dude in a field who just happened to see some shit go down, and he's just like, hey, dude, this is fucking like unbeatable guy. I think it's... like, he was like an artist or Arthur. I don't know what's going on.
I mean,
on, but,
we're in danger of getting off topic right now, because I could do an entire podcast of just cursing out St. Gildas.
Oh, yeah, that guy.
Yeah, that dude.
Okay, we'll try to stay on topic then. So so that gets us up to where we are now?
Yeah.
Ish?
So that's, where are we in history, like chronologically?
We are in the 12th century right now.
Okay.
But Geoffrey publishes his work in the 12th century, and then the writer that we're going to be devoting most of our time to today also wrote in the 12th century.
Okay.
But just across the channel. And I'd like to actually begin by going back to Monmouth before we jump in to where we're going to go.
Right on.
Because, well, Monmouth, in his History of the Kings of Britain, lays out how the knights and the ladies of the castles behave to one another.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he says that the women of the castle wouldn't give themselves to a knight until they had proved themselves three times in battle. And this led the knights to be bold and the ladies to be chaste.
Mm.
This is, while it's not there yet, this is the beginning of the idea of courtly love that will develop in the High Middle Ages.
So, like, if a dude does, like, a helicopter swing with a sword and lops a dude's head off, then he's just like, that's one lady coming for you.
Okay. Yep, that's one.
Just, like, just people trying to do, like, flips in the battlefield. Just like, dude, check out how badass I am. Go marry you
now. And all that armor just trying to, like, do a flip. Just
yeah, they were not very successful.
Yeah.
That's a half lady right there.
Oh, hey, I came off my horse, didn't even stumble, but all this weight. That's pretty good, right? Can I marry you?
Can I marry you?
I haven't got any skills.
Are those good enough nuptials?
You feeling proper wooed now? You feel properly wooed? Because I got proper wood.
Oh my god.
And we're back. Okay.
Okay.
So it's just quietly like,
He puts up with us.
That's courtly love right there, baby.
That is courtly love. I love you guys from afar.
When courtly love, like, kill Kurt Cobain.
I knew you were going to make Courtney's love joke.
Everyone can see my jokes coming a mile away. That's the best part about it, is they can say the punchline along with me because they're already there. That's how comedy works. Okay, sorry. Go ahead, sir.
So this writer that we're going to be talking about today, it's almost as if he read this one statement and decided, I'm going to jump head into this idea right here. Mm. And most of his works, the writer we're going to be talking about today is Chrétien de Troyes, who is other
we'll
than
put, we'll put a link of how Crouton to spell day that. Yeah.
Yes,
Chrétien de Two.
Chrétien de Troyes. Chrétien was writing in France at the time.
Okay.
Chrétien wrote between 1160 and 1172, and he came out with a few Arthurian stories, but they're not even called legends anymore. Chrétien's the one that invents the genre of the romance. And actually, Chrétien, though he's very well regarded in Arthurian circles, is actually underrated a lot in the Western literary tradition, because a lot of scholars have actually said that Kreteon was the beginning of what would evolve into the modern novel. He was a break from the literary tradition of histories or great poetic epics. And he was the one that focused on prose about knights and love and different episodes that would form into a full story.
So he was like the first Danielle Steele?
Yes.
Like just writing some steamy shit? That's cool.
We shouldn't think of them obviously as romances that you pick up in like the romance section today.
It wasn't like a crudely drawn like buff dude on the front, like with like roses in the background.
Yeah,
I don't know how these stories were.
He's just got his metal pants on, but up top he's just all glistening.
It's just ripped.
You certainly won't see like an oiled up Galahad in his stories yet.
Damn it.
Why are we talking about this?
I know. Podcast over. Okay. But this was with that, he's the great, great, great grandfather of the smut we read today, man.
Yeah. Mm. Kind of.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. That's awesome.
So Kreteon only writes five Arthurian stories. And Arthur is actually not too important to any of these stories either. So there's also a reevaluation of what purpose Arthur has in this legend. Think of it like this. In Geoffrey and Monmouth's stories, and in the Welsh tales as well, Arthur is like Batman. His knights are people like Robin and Catwoman and Nightwing and Batgirl and Oracle and stuff. You know, like people that are interesting and have their own stories that they go off on. But the real hero is always Batman. That's the one that you always you always come down to.
You can't have a Batgirl without a Batman in that version.
Exactly.
In real life, you can. Girl
That's
power.
Right, ladies.
But in the story of Batman.
So was he kind of building up the stories of all these other characters that his, you know, prior to now have just been kind of these tertiary people? And
yeah.
Is that the idea?
Yeah, in Kreteon's version, Arthur is a lot more like Nick Fury. He might be important because he organizes the Avengers, but most people are excited about Iron Man and Captain America and the Hulk and Thor and, you know.
How interesting.
All of them. Okay. At least that's the way that Kreteon seems to perceive Arthur. And you can see from his stories as well, because none of his stories is about Arthur. His stories are Eric and Enid. Eric is one of the knights in Arthur's court. Yvain, the knight of the lion, is also a knight in Arthur's court. The knight in the cart is this mysterious knight that we'll get to. Oh. And then Percival is this guy who really badly wants to be part of Arthur's court. And for most of the story is just kind of laughed out of there. Go ahead.
How come
Crouton de Twain.
We can call him Crouton for the rest of the podcast. That's helpful.
I might.
Respecting this man's legacy.
How come Mr. Trois only wrote for 12 years?
So I would love to give you an answer to that. The simple answer is we don't know.
Okay.
Syphilis.
We actually don't know a lot about Kreteon's life or Crouton's life. Yeah.
Thank you. Other than he invented a delicious textural element for salads.
He did. Yeah, that's a big part of his legacy there.
Dang crouton, you made these yourself. They're quite good.
Yeah.
I guess it'd be French, though.
Who's that guy?
a guy who ate the first crouton. Okay, guy, I'm fucking weaving tails over here. I'm the next crouton de toi. Okay. Go ahead, Dylan.
Well, one of the reasons why crouton is important isn't just the stories he was writing, but also probably who he was writing for. He was writing for Marie of France, who was the daughter of Eleanor of Aquitaine. And we don't necessarily have time to get into Eleanor of Aquitaine and her life, although she's absolutely fascinating, and we might want to do another podcast about her.
Always
sounds good.
Always down, especially if it's about the ladies.
Exactly.
And so Crouton was writing for her daughter?
Crouton was writing for her daughter. Yeah.
Okay.
And like, what way? Like she was his patron or something, or like, he was writing these for getting in her pants.
Some Daniel Steele.
Well, I'm not going to speculate on to Crouton's motivations.
Crouton was a noble man.
Yeah. But a significant amount of his stories are dedicated to her. And it seems like she was his patron.
Cool.
So one of the stories we're going to talk about, The Knight in the Cart, is dedicated to Maria France. And I think that it's important to look at the sort of marriage troubles that her mother had in the way that we understand this text.
Okay. The Knight in the Cart. Now, this is K-N-I-G-H-T?
Yes.
Okay, because when he first said it, I was just like, man, I had this one night, dude. I was hungover. I couldn't drive, so I had to lay back in the cart. I thought it was just like some dude had spent a whole night in a cart. And I was like, that doesn't seem great, but the night in the cart, I'm like, okay, now we got some potential here. Might be some, like, robbery, and I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, you got to specify for an audio thing.
No, that's true.
What
are
we talking about? So we got KN night. Okay.
So I think that's a worthy enough introduction to Crouton and his life and the politics that were going on around him. I think it's a great time for us to jump into the story of The Knight and the Cart.
Let's do it.
Yeah. So the story begins at Arthur's court. And Arthur and his knights are just like kind of celebrating. Honestly, almost all Arthurian stories start with Arthur and his knights just celebrating something.
Just at the end of a joke, they're just like, and I said rectum, damn near killed him. Mead for everybody. Mead
exactly.
for everybody.
It seems like...
Is it, so it's just like a general, like, we just crushed butt back there.
Yeah.
I mean, but they never get into what it is.
The sense that I get from it is something like Arthur's knights are basically just drinking and screwing around the entire time until someone comes in and says, hey, I took all your lands or something.
Right.
And then they're like, oh, well, now we have to fight.
That's how all good stories start.
Exactly.
Partying, then some dude took my apartment over, so I had to go fight him. So that's a good story.
Sir Gawain and the Green Knight begins the exact same way, you know, like so many of these stories do. Anyway.
All right. So they're partying, having a good time.
Little Women starts the same way.
Yeah. They're partying, they're having a good time. And then this dude named Meligant, who is the prince of some rival kingdom, comes in and says, hey, Arthur, I've like kidnapped like 50 of your men, and I'm not going to let them go unless one of your knights rides out with Guinevere and challenges me to single combat. And
it seems like a trap.
You would think so, yeah. And in fact, most of the court thinks so as well. He says basically the terms of the deal are, if he wins against me, I will release all of those people. If I win against him, I get Guinevere, and she will become mine.
Don't be doing that.
And then he sort of leaves, and he's like, that's my condition. Take it or leave it. I'm going to get out. And the knights are all kind of thinking about, what should we do in this situation? And Sir Kay is just irrational and angry the entire time and just shouting down everyone. And
Sir Kay is Arthur's like half brother, right?
Yeah. Like more like adopted brother. He was the knight that Arthur was raised with.
Right. He was like an asshole, and then he became less of an asshole towards him. And now they're like, he like stands up for Arthur, right?
Exactly. Yeah, that's Sir Kay. And Sir Kay is always, by the way, Sir Kay is always an asshole, but he learns to respect and love Arthur.
So he's their asshole.
He directs his assholery to others.
To other people, yeah. Anyway, this is a typical example of Sir Kay being an absolute asshole. And finally, Arthur is like, look, you gotta calm down. Look, whatever you want, as long as you calm down, whatever you want, I promise I'll give you whatever you want right here.
To Sir Kay?
To Sir Kay. Yeah.
Okay.
And this is, as you know from a lot of fairy tales or stories, mythology and stuff, you should never promise someone to give them whatever they want until you actually know what they want.
Yes.
Yeah. So Sir Kay says, okay, well, I want to ride out with Guinevere and challenge him to single combat. Like, oh, no. this dude can't get away with this. And Arthur's like, well, I'm not happy about this, and this is not what I wanted to do, but I did give my word that I would give you, you know, whatever you wanted. So...
But then Guinevere says, I'm not your property, and I can make my own choices, and she leaves them all.
End of story.
It would be really great if that's the way that this story worked out.
Yeah. She's just like, all right, then.
Just kidding.
Whatever.
Yeah. Women had no say.
Exactly.
At least in this, she's down with the plan.
Yeah, yep. And so Sir Kay and Guinevere ride off to meet Maleagant, and Maleagant kicks Sir Kay's ass, and then throws both Guinevere and Kay into like this like into the tower together. There he's like,
what a shocker.
Yeah, you two are now my prisoners, and this is just the way it's going to go. And
so is this dude's like a badass then in terms of combat?
In terms of combat, no this joke. Dude is awesome.
Yeah. Okay. Because when he's like rolling in, just like, hey, Arthur, got 50 of your men. What are you going to do about it? And then they're like, not immediately, just like Boa's ass to the door.
If somebody gets welcomed into your space, you can't just kill them. The home is a very sacred place. And so if they're a guest, if somebody accidentally calls them, that happens in Greek myth a lot, right, Dylan? Where if calls them a guest, then
guest of your house,
they're just sitting there plotting, like, how can you kill them without killing them because they're a guest and there are these rules.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
That's the reason why the Trojan War had to happen, because you're not supposed to run off with your host's wife. And that's also the reason why Odysseus had to kill all the suitors at the end of the Odyssey, because you're not supposed to overstay your welcome. And they all did that. Therefore, they deserve to die. That is very definitely a...
I just want to be clear. I'm not launching these 1,000 ships because he took my lady. It's just not a proper thing to do.
There is actually a cultural reason for this as well, and that's that if you have two warring sides, your war will go on in perpetuity if you can't meet somewhere in safety and like work out a treaty.
Yeah.
So there's
true.
There's actually like historical political reasons why these rules exist. But yeah, in the legends, you can't just murder someone when they wander into your castle.
Alrighty, so we are with Sir Kay and Guinevere up in the tower. So what happens next?
Okay, so next, Sir Gawain, basically says, okay, well, now someone has to rescue the queen because Sir Kay was a fuck up and you know, just kind of let the entire round table down here. I'm going to go myself. And I'm going to go with this one mysterious knight that is here, but, you know, doesn't really talk, doesn't really have a name or anything like that.
He's just over in the corner, like, with a mead and a pipe, just, like, watching everybody. He's like Aragorn in The Prancing Pony.
Yeah, there
you go. He's just fucking, like, surveying.
Just eating meat off a knife.
Yeah. Like, I guess you're cool, dude, because Arthur said you can hang, but why don't you come along with me in this cart?
We've been calling him Sir Jerry.
So Arthur agrees with this. He thinks, okay, two knights, one of them might be able to best him in single combat. Sir Gawain, by the way, is in the English tradition, like Arthur's, was at this time Arthur's best knight as well. So remember, this is before like Lancelot's like a part of the story and everything. This is like, Sir Gawain is like the one.
Oh, in terms of like combat? In my head, I heard best friend. That's why I was like, oh, that's sweet.
My best friend said, why right there?
Are they like best friends too? Or he's just the best combat?
Yeah. They also happen to be very good friends as well.
That's nice.
And this actually comes up in like later Arthurian tradition when like there's the stories of like Lancelot and Guinevere like breaking the round table up and stuff. Sir Gawain is the one that's most vengeful about that. He's the one who's most passionately loyal to Arthur, and he actually meets his death in battle against Lancelot.
Wow.
Yeah.
Damn.
That's just a little taste of who Sir Gawain was, because I think that now when we think of him as like one of the lesser important knights. I mean, there's definitely that poem, Sir Gawain and the Green Knight, but we don't think of him in the same way we would think of like Lancelot or Galahad or even probably Percival now.
Okay, yeah.
But just to know, like, this was like the knight right here is the one who's like, he's going to come in and solve everything. Anyway, him and this like pretty like broody, like broody guy, like they set off and this, and as they're racing to get to Maligant and Guinevere, this mysterious knight is so passionate about getting to Guinevere that he rides his horse to death getting there.
Oh,
and then
God.
He asks for Gawain's horse, and Gawain gives him his horse because he's like, oh, this dude seems passionate right here. And then he rides Gawain's horse to death.
What does Gawain ride?
Gawain makes his... Well, yeah, Gawain gets his own, gets another horse, and he makes a slower, safer path to get to Maligant.
I thought, like, the horse dies, like, right, Gawain's right next to it, but he's just riding that horse so hard, and Gawain's just like, give him some water. Like, you don't have to do that. He's just like, we gotta make good time! He's like, we are making good time. Quit killing your horses.
Jerry.
This dude's on one. He's not messing around.
Yeah.
He's gonna get these people back.
Exactly. And the way that Kraytheon describes it as well is that Sir Gawain takes, like, the longer, safer route, but he describes this knight rides down the blade of the sword to get Guinevere, and even on the way gets challenged to duels and doesn't do the honorable thing of accepting the challenge, just keeps on riding by.
Whoa!
Yeah.
Wait. Why does he get challenged to be like, hey, you want to duel? No. All right.
You want to fight then?
Nah. Another thing about Arthurian legend, it seems that if you step even like a foot out of the castle, you get challenged to a duel.
Apparently, yeah. Like he's just riding horses to death. People are like, hey, you want to fight?
You fancy a stroll in the park?
Exactly.
Not without a duel first. come have some of it.
There is even a situation where he finds like a strand of Guinevere's hair and is so enraptured by it that he doesn't notice the fact that he's actually lancing with someone at the same time.
So he's just obsessed with Guinevere?
Absolutely, like passionately, weirdly, obsessively obsessed with Guinevere.
He's got a hair doll over, you know it.
Yeah.
Ew.
Like in his pocket.
He's like Helga in Hey Arnold, and he's got like a gum portrait of Guinevere in his closet.
Just a bunch of mud and then like stray hair attached to it.
It's like she looks balding.
Oh, God.
No, so, don't go to Jerry's room. There's some weird stuff in there. It's a mud monster.
So, anyway, he's after he rides Sir Gawain's horse to death, he tries to like hitchhike or like find like a way to get to Guinevere, and this dwarf comes in with a cart and the dwarf offers him, like, the dwarf knows where Guinevere is and will only tell him if he rides in the cart with him. I don't know why. I think the dwarf might be lonely, but you know, for whatever reason, he can't
He's
get
like,
the
ass, grass, or gas, baby. Ain't no ride for free.
Exactly.
Please just hang out with me. I'm lonely.
But for whatever reason, he won't let him get into the cart unless he won't tell him where Guinevere is unless he like rides in the cart with him. And this mysterious knight hesitates for two steps. there.
Hold on, Dylan.
Nick's still out. Nick's still out. Continue, sir.
Sorry.
Nickel, don't mind the chuckling fool in the background. I had a particularly slaying joke. So Jerry agrees to sit in the cart with a dwarf, though. He's like, all right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
so now they're
finally
off.
Agrees to do it.
He's just like, make the horse go faster.
Exactly.
No.
Now, you should know the reason why he hesitates to get into the cart with the dwarf.
Okay.
Is because at this time carts are reserved for just like bringing prisoners to like the execution and stuff like that. Like if you were riding in a cart is not an honorable way for a knight to get around.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Like you should be on foot or you should be on your horse. And so when he's riding in the cart, everyone he meets is like laughing at him. And just absolutely making fun of him and debasing him. And even after he gets off the cart and somehow finds a new horse that he can ride, everyone in the land has known, oh, this dude rode in a cart.
Wow. I'm not even going to do you.
News travels fast in this land.
Yeah. Also, another fun thing about these romances is that if you do something, instantly every single person knows, no matter where they are.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Yeah. Anyway, he finally gets to the castle where Maleagant is with Guinevere and Sir Kay.
But Gawain is not there yet.
No.
So is Gawain just like trotting along? Because this guy has dueled and lanced people and done a deal with the dwarf and killed two horses and still made it to this castle before Gawain.
Yes.
Gawain's still in like his first duel. He's just having a good time with it. It's like, I love a good sporting fight.
When he gets to Maleagant's castle, he introduces himself to Maleagant. And introduces himself. He is Sir Lancelot.
What?
Yeah.
Jerry?
Oh, yeah.
Shit.
Oh, man. And he was lancing fools.
That's why he's all in a Gwen.
Damn. We were talking about, like, oh, Lancelot's not in the story. I didn't even know you were setting anything up. Crafty.
I knew the whole MF. Time. I knew the whole time.
Damn, that's cool. Okay, so he's just like Lancelot in the house.
Yep. And he says, you know, like, I'm here to fight you, to rescue the queen, and also probably free Sir Kay and Maleagant is like, okay, cool, we'll fight tomorrow, and
that's
everything.
Fair.
Yeah, and when he's staying the night at Maleagant's castle, he sneaks into, breaks into the place where Guinevere is. And Guinevere, by the way, is not happy with him at all. She actually kind of treats him like shit.
Really?
Yeah. And the reason why is, as much as everyone knows that he rode in a cart, she knows that he hesitated to get in that cart.
Okay.
And so she is holding it over him, the fact that, like, if he was a true knight, if he truly cared about rescuing her, he wouldn't have hesitated at all. That shouldn't be a thing that he does.
Wow.
So now he has to, you know, prove to her that that he loves her.
Is this like their first interaction?
Yes.
Wow.
Now, okay, yeah. So not only do like stories travel incredibly fast in this land, they're also very specific. Hey, wait a tick. It's just like, it's so specific.
It's because Lancelot, every time someone's like, look at that guy, he's in a car, he's like, hey, I hesitated, okay? I hesitated. So that noise, news got out.
That's probably how it went down.
Yeah.
Wow. So he's just like, dude, everyone's busting my balls. I got the freaking people on the side of the road busting my balls for being in the car. She's busting my balls because I wouldn't get in the cart fast enough. Because you're a bunch of ball busters. I'll have you know right now. I'm tired of it. So now he really has to prove his knighthood and his love for her and his passion.
Yeah.
Although, makes sense why he's all creepy about killing horses to get to her now. Now we know who it is. Okay.
Yeah. Although, to be honest, I'm not certain how angry she was with him, because they do end up sleeping together in there.
Damn.
Because it's a romance novel. He came in shirtless, oiled up, his hair always in wind somehow, even though they're inside.
Even though he has a buzz cut. And still just kind of rifles through there.
Oh, and he's also wounded because, like, he's not paying attention when people are attacking him on the road and stuff as well.
Jeez.
And also...
Creep.
And a cot!
And also, it seems like they go all night as well.
They go all night.
Yeah.
That was playing in the background.
It's Beyonce.
I've already piped it in, guys. We good. Lancelot's like, I'm gonna hop on the surfboard later. Guinevere, is she married to Arthur? Or is she just...
Okay. She's already the queen, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. I just want to make sure that I had heard that correct.
And to be fair, it's very apparent in writing the story that they're like, well, I mean, they shouldn't do this. Like, she shouldn't sleep with Lancelot and everything. But also, they seem to really love each other at the same time. So, you know, again, this is the French writing this. So, you know, it's different culture than
the Amour.
Yeah. I mean, she is my wife, but
if
you feel passionate, you can give her your baguette, and it's okay.
Okay, so he shows up exhausted, wounded, and then he just bangs his brains out.
Yep.
So then now it's the morning, and he's just like, gotta crawl out of bed.
This is the best night of his life,
fight
though.
This dude.
So now he has to fight this dude, but he crawls out of bed, he sneaks out. And then Maligan...
Wait, is Sir Kay in the room when they're getting down? Is Sir Kay just in the corner just...
He's like, I don't approve.
Why
that's actually what I was just about to get to.
Right? Oh, God.
Yeah.
Sorry, continue.
Okay. So Maligan, like, goes into the room and sees Guinevere, like, all disheveled on the bed.
just ruined
with blood on the bed as well because of Lancelot's wounds.
Okay.
And he accuses her of having sex with Sir Kay, who's also in the room and just slept through the entire night.
Yeah, he did. Tight. He's a little me drunk, you know.
and then so now the fight that Lancelot has to fight with Maligan is no longer necessarily a fight just to save her. Now it's a fight for her honor.
Oh, no. Because she's just saying, like, I don't know where that blood came from.
Yeah, exactly. And...
It's my mom, please.
That's what I was going to say. It's my mom, please, I go.
She just had some real bad cramps and rolled around in her sleep. And
she couldn't find any My Doll guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's like, I'm fucking woman.
She was out of Tampax pearls.
I'm just imagining Sir Kay, like, he expends so much energy in the day, like, yelling and stomping around that he's like a toddler, and when he goes to bed, he's like,
he's rah, rah, rah. He just lifts him up by his legs, like, and he'll never wake up.
He's like, still in his armor, doesn't even dress, he's just...
No, and then he, like, sleep talks, and he's, like, yelling, and then...
So baby can't fall in his armor. Baby go sleep, boy. It's okay. Out.
She should have claimed that it was her period.
Okay, so now it's
come on Guinevere's part.
Now there's a hell of a lot on the line. There's a lot going on. Okay, so now they go into this fight.
Yeah, well, so Lancelot basically says, because Maligan is accusing Kay and Guinevere of sleeping together.
And Lancelot's like, that's not true, and I'm mad because it was me who slept with her.
Well,
shit. Lancelot. Sir Kay could have done that to her?
Lancelot.
That's Lanza. I can't think of
one. And Dylan?
Yeah. Lancelot challenges Maligan to a second duel to defend her honor.
Before the first one's taken place.
Yes.
Okay.
And
what? Can't they just combine them?
No.
No, it's impossible.
And he says specifically, like, it'll be a duel to determine if Sir Kay slept with Guinevere. Notice he doesn't say it's not a duel to determine if Guinevere kept her honor, because he knows that's not true.
Yeah,
but
yeah, totally.
He can prove that Sir Kay did not sleep with her.
Wasn't nothing honorable by last night, baby.
Yeah.
But it weren't Sir Kay.
Okay. So, does anyone know? I don't want to get off on it. So these duels and things, obviously they're not to the death. No one's interested in killing each other. Like, how do they determine when one won? Someone's just like, all right, you got it.
It's basically when someone taps out or so. Okay. I mean, like, they can go to the death if nobody, you know, if nobody taps out or surrenders.
Okay.
That makes more sense, 'cause goes to the
I was going
to
ask why he didn't, why Sir Kay was still alive.
He's like, we're going to do one duel. And then when someone taps, we'll like rest for 10 minutes, get some orange slices, and then we're going to duel again for the honor.
It's like the UFC.
Yeah. Sir Kay, probably one of the reasons why he wasn't too conscious during that entire night of lovemaking is because he is like bleeding out on the other side of the room.
I mean, right.
That's because he got into a drunken stupor and fell on a broken stool.
He punched a mirror out in rage and then like forgot it was there.
Whatever, he's like, what are you even mad about? He's like, I don't know. I'm Sir Kay, I'm always angry.
Okay, I forgot that. Yeah, he had a fight and probably got jacked pretty good.
So on the first fight with Maligan, Lancelot fights against him, but is so enraptured by Guinevere during the fight that when he turns in a way that he can't actually see Guinevere during the fight, he actually turns his back to Maligand and fights backwards so that he can see her the entire time.
Oh my god.
Wow. This dude is like a stalker. On a level. Wow. So he's just like, so is he, and he's doing this capably?
Yes.
He's just like Neo at the end of Matrix, and he's just like, whatever, over there in the fight, but this right here.
Yeah.
Wow.
Cool.
Okay, so does he win the first
duel? He wins the first fight. He wins the first duel.
Okay.
Against Maligand.
Okay.
But then comes the time for the second duel. And this is when Guinevere's attendant comes and talks to Lancelot and says, look, the queen's very happy about, you know, last night and, like, the way that you performed right there. That all looks good and everything. But she's still kind of angry about the fact that you hesitated while getting into that cart. And so...
He's like, what do I have to do?
If you want to truly prove that you love her, you have to lose this fight.
What?
Oh, yeah. Whoa. So lose the fight.
Twist.
So it's like a nice
which
tale.
Would prove that Sir Kay slept with Guinevere, and that's how you prove ultimate honor? He has to basically be like, he tapped it.
No, I think I'm getting the fights mixed up. I think the first fight was to prove that
honor. This is for her freedom,
and this is for her freedom.
Whoa! Yeah. Even wow.
Yeah.
Seriously, guys, do not ride in a cart because someone's willing to enslave themselves so that you can like be humbled. I guess further.
It's like the movie Knight's Tale, where she's like, "You got to lose for me."
Oh, is that where they got that? That's probably where they got that.
Okay. Yeah, you just ruined one of the quiz questions, but that is actually where they got that.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Nick gets a point for the pop quiz.
Lancelot is like, okay. And he just starts embarrassingly losing the fight. Like doing well enough to like still stay in it, but just not being aggressive, not just like he's just letting his ass get handed to him the entire time.
Okay.
Until the attendant comes up to him again and says, like, yeah, okay, you proved it. We good now. Now you have to beat him. And Lancelot defeats Maligand, actually very easily defeats him.
Yeah.
And then takes Guinevere back to Arthur's castle.
And Sir Kay's in the back like, I softened him up for ya.
Yeah.
I did him in on the ribs, you know.
I gave him a good kidney shot or two. A couple liver shots. Bah, bah, bah.
And also, does Sir Gawain ever show up just being like, I'm here. Let's go home now.
Yeah, they might meet up with Sir Gawain at one point or another.
He's
to be honest,
he's picking flowers.
Really
he's still in his first duel, just being like, this is fun.
He is not a significant part of this story. This story is about how awesome Lancelot is.
Wow. That is pretty badass.
Yeah.
That's awesome, man. So the knight in the cart. So now it makes sense. The whole cart is just like the crux of it all.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was wondering, I was like, is a cart like a really big part of this?
Yeah. Is it like,
The fact that the whole hesitation thing is just like, that's like her whole thing. It's like, you hesitated. So, okay. A cart, huh? Cart and a dwarf.
That's awesome, man.
So that is the knight in the cart. That is the beginning of the Lancelot story. And this is probably the most significant story that Chrétien wrote as well.
Yeah, because brought in the whole Lancelot mythos, you know, and that's where I'm guessing that it leads into the whole, you know, betrayal and, you know, Guinevere, the love triangle whole thing, you know, that is at this point such a staple of any Arthurian movie or show. It's like that's usually what it's all about, you know.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's something that, as far as we can tell, might have been a complete invention of Chrétien. Maybe there's some lost story of Lancelot before he took it up, but there's no mention of him in the Welsh legends. There's no mention of him in Geoffrey of Monmouth's version or any version that we have. There's no one even that's even remotely related to him.
Wow.
So weird.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Julio, good invention.
So rad.
Dude. Lancelot in this mug.
Lancelot hot up in this.
Oh my god.
Casey, anybody?
Hanselot, dude. He's up in this mug. That's awesome, man. So the knight in the cart. That's cool. Damn, that dude's just like, I'm about to change the game right now. I'm going to add this other guy. He's going to be sick.
Yeah, who would have thunk? It would turn into what it did, you know?
Yeah, that's awesome, man. Crouton, that's so cool. Right, so I know that we kind of ruined it already.
Sorry.
And I apologize. We've done that too many times where we just stumble into something and you see our host go like, damn it.
Yeah.
But I think that we should still proceed with the
quiz. Pop quiz. It's time for the pop quiz. Quiz. Pop quiz. We'll laugh when Nick loses. Pop quiz!
Okay, guys, so I have a series of three questions for you for the pop quiz on Lancelot and the Knight in the Cart. Now, specifically, there are two big Hollywood movies that have drawn direct inspiration from The Knight in the Cart. You did name one of them in The Knight's Tale, but great wondering movie. If you can name the other one.
Oh,
that draws. You guys go first. You guys go first.
They make them lose?
Yeah, I mean, like, obviously, Lancelot and Guinevere are big characters that popped into many different movies and stuff, but as far as I can tell, there are two movies that have directly been influenced by this one specific story.
And they're not Arthur movies, right?
They might be, they might not be.
Oh, okay.
Man, we're not getting hints and make a guess, you bang bong.
Young Frankenstein, because they take a hole in the hay. I'm guessing that there's a hay in that cart.
I'm going to guess the Black Knight.
Tight.
Nailed it.
Go with me here, because this at least does happen. I'm going to go True Grit, because at the end, he rides back to get her back to safety because she got bit by the snake. He literally rides a horse to death and just fucking shoots that thing and keeps going.
Interesting.
Bam.
Interesting. So the movie I was looking at, well, one, The Knight's Tale, which you had already guessed.
Indeed.
And the other is The First Knight with Richard Gere and Sean Connery.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
It's not a particularly good movie, but it is directly based off of
not as good as Black Knight.
Knight in the Cart.
No, okay, my thing was like a little one-off, but I was it's... Okay, so First Knight.
Yeah.
Okay. And A Knight's Tale. Do watch A Knight's Tale, though. That movie's great.
Oh, that movie's
so good.
Yeah. Heath Ledger. Heath Ledger's so great.
R.I.P.
Soundtrack.
Alan Tudyk, Paul Bettany. Man.
Actually,
James Purefoy.
If you notice, there's a scene in the beginning of the movie where I think Heath Ledger's character is riding in a cart as well.
Yeah. Oh, cool.
Yeah. Anyway.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Second question. So Lancelot ends up having children, not necessarily with Guinevere, but with his
asshole.
With his own wife. Well, you know, politics. Anyway, one of them actually becomes a quite famous knight on his own accord. And I'm wondering if you know who that person is.
Shug Knight.
Damn.
That's my guess.
Another famous
Florence
knight.
Nightingale.
I feel like you named them all already.
It's clearly
me. Gallivant.
There you go.
Gallivant?
Yep.
Okay.
That's what we got.
Is that the knight that's on the like ABC show or something?
Yeah,
like
it is.
Sure is.
Okay.
Super famous now.
He's Lancelot's kid.
So Lancelot's son is actually Galahad.
Oh, we did name him already.
I figured.
Not Gallivant, but.
I think it's Galahad popped in my head. I was like, nah. I just moved on.
Okay.
I didn't know that. How interesting.
He has his own story and like myth and legend that he goes with, because Galahad is considered to be the perfect knight. To the point where he's actually a little boring. he's kind of, you know, the issues with Superman where like bad Superman stories, he's just too perfect all the time. That's kind of what reading Galahad stories are like.
Also,
Raytheon might have invented the character of Lancelot. A lot of the story of Lancelot and Guinevere is directly inspired by another famous legend that also is a little bit in and out of Arthurian legend. And I'm wondering if you know who, like, what story inspired their love twist.
Oh God, I'm just gonna go Tristan and Isolde, but
it's just because it's a
dude
say.
And a girl. Boom! That's why I said first. You're smart enough to have a second option. I only got that.
I'll go with Paris, Helen, and Menelaus.
He's like Trojan and stuff.
I am legend.
My last place guess, because they took all the good ones, is I don't know, freaking
Barney Fife and Robin Sherbatz.
Merlin and Morgan Le Fay.
There you go.
Interesting. That would be fascinating to see.
Okay. Sick, yeah. Yeah. How's that story?
Yeah.
It is actually Tristan.
Holla at your boy!
Yeah. It's just because Dylan said love Trist, and then you were like,
not even. I had Tristan it before he even got through that sentence, lady.
Whatever.
You should have gone with I Am Legend.
To be fair, that's a pretty softball one. I can't get the hard ones, so you gotta give me the ones I can
get.
Okay,
so I think Mike wins with one.
Dude,
you told me Suge Knight was not right?
Yes.
Yeah. In the category of like clever answers, Nick did pretty darn good. So,
yeah.
So thank you for that, dude. You guys, this was awesome. This is cool. So crouton de trois, man. Mm-hmm. You know, who knew? Bringing us great characters like Lancelot. And that was only one of the five stories, you guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. We will be getting into more of those stories. I can promise you that. Thank you for bearing with us, folks. Anytime there's an opportunity to like get ridiculous, we're going to go for that.
Yeah.
So, you know, thanks for hanging in. And, I guess do check us out, on our social media for more ridiculousness and fun stuff. We have a lot of fun content coming out on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. You can follow us there at the Brothers Murph. Just search for us. You'll find us.
Yep, we're there.
Do leave us a review, you guys. If you're digging on this, you want to know more, legends and fairy tales and things. If there's anything that you guys want to hear, let us know. Leave us a review. Tell us what you like. And we'll incorporate that into the show for now. I have been Michael Lee Murphy.
I'm Nick Murphy.
Casey Brown.
I'm Dylan White.
And we are imploring you to stay curious. Just go duel some mofo. Just see him on the street and just be like, you're on my turf. We're going to duel. It's like in Fight Club when they're trying to fight people when they're not down.
Yeah,
pay down. All right, now we're going to go.